Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
There's an Apple event on Monday.
What? Why wasn't I informed?
We didn't know how to tell you.
Yeah, I know. It's hard.
Awkward.
Yep. Cool. So, MacBooks?
Yeah. MacBook Pro, at last. New Apple Silicon chip, at last. All the things that they probably wanted to announce in July, but couldn't. Or June, but couldn't, I guess. June. WWDC. And couldn't because of legacy nodes and other things like
that. So, here's the question then. We are seeing these MacBook Pros, which we presume have some new flavor of chip in them. Now,
lemon.
Given, as you said, given, as you said, that they were originally intending to release these things possibly earlier in the year, do we think these are like last of the old generation of MacBook Pros or first of the new generation of MacBook Pros?
Well, I think it's the first of a new generation of MacBook Pros, but
discounting the ones that we have obviously seen already, which are the low-end MacBook Pros.
Right, the low-end 13 that is like shouldn't even be called that, but that's what it is. I think that these will be substantially redesigned, but it is, I think, the last of the M1 generation, right?
Sure.
Which is based on the A14. And this will also be based on the A14, but have lots and lots of cores and support for more RAM and literally everyone who looked at the M1 and said, but it doesn't do X, like that's what this one is supposed to be. Maybe they'll call it the M1X or maybe not. Mike and I were just guessing on upgrade that maybe it'll be for 20 cores, it'll be the M1 double X. And you'll just go like that. Just keep adding Roman numerals to how many cores there are. Maybe, probably not.
That could work. The MIII.
What I did in on Six Colors earlier this year, late last year, mm-hmm, I forget when, mm-hmm, I did that speculation of like if we count the cores that are rumored to be in the base model M1X or whatever it's called,
right,
how fast is it? And the answer is way faster than the fastest Intel MacBook Pro, way faster. And basically faster than some Mac Pros, but not all Mac Pros. So I think it will be, when they talk about unleashed, I really do think that the number one thing it's going to be is about the incredible speed gains by putting a load of processor cores in on an Apple Silicon Mac.
Right. I mean, the story is performance, right? I mean, that's what we've been hearing with Apple Silicon. It's basically performance and power efficiency, which is, you know, what else is there?
Yeah, and I assume they'll put a load of GPU cores on there too, because that's always a question for pro users, is what's the GPU performance like? And if they're not using a third-party GPU, which I assume they're not. I just kind of assume that that's not something that they're going to do for yet. Like, that maybe they'll do that down the road, but these systems are still, they're still kind of spreading out of building iPhones and iPads with this stuff. And so adding like support for external GPUs and all that seems like they can probably get as far as they need to go on these systems with their, with just a bunch of their GPUs.
And it gives them time to figure out probably how to integrate all that stuff, which is, I'm sure, not an easy thing to do. I'm sure drivers for those things are low level. One would assume that is not necessarily easy to get all of that working correctly. And it strikes me as something that when they, eventually roll out a Apple Silicon-based Mac Pro, which is probably going to need support for discrete GPUs, that they can be ready by that point. And then maybe later on, that will sort of work its way into the laptop one as well.
I agree. I think that's exactly the sequence is they need them for the Mac Pro. And then once they have that ability, will they offer potentially like a high-end GPU for a laptop or even like another desktop? Maybe at that point they would do it, but like they have to do it for the Mac Pro unless they're doing that work and like they roll it out early for some other device. But I feel like everything feels late. I was saying to this on Upgrade 2 with Mike, that it really feels like, these laptops, they wanted them out in June. But pandemic and all of the supply chain slowdowns, they didn't get them out in June. the stuff that we probably would have gotten this fall, we're probably not going to get till next spring. And I really believe that at one point when they were planning their two-year transition, they really did. This is just a gut feeling based on their history, but I really did believe they wanted to like pre-announce the Mac Pro early and ship it by the end of this year. And I think it's a next year thing. Like, I think maybe at some point they dreamed that this would be a little bit less than a 2-year transition.
Yes.
But there's
no way
it's going to be now because of everything else that's going on. Yeah. It's not their fault. It's literally everything else is going on.
Yeah, I think that given their experience with this and the way that they sort of like promoted it, I pretty firmly believe that this transition was going to be like, oh, you know, we'll tell everybody 2 years, but it will be done in, you know, a year and a half or something like that. And they're like, you know what? We want to under promise and over deliver. We don't want to over promise and under deliver. Let's tell them 2 years. And if we show up in a year and a half, that's great. But if we get in trouble and we can't deliver something on time, we can probably, you know, we feel very confident that we'd be able to make it in 2 years without any problems.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. I think it's a 2-year transition that's going to be a 2-year transition. And I think it's not impossible that they may go over slightly. Like,
yeah. Well, I think
that Mac Pro is going to push that 2-year envelope there.
Yeah, I agree. I think if they announce it at WWDC next year and say it'll ship by the end of the year, that would be slightly longer than a 2-year transition. That's right. Okay. Like, I think that everybody understands that everything got kind of pushed back. But as a result, I do think that some of their, they're not exactly marching in lockstep here because they've got different products coming at times that aren't expected. Like one of the discussions that Mike and I like to talk about is color stuff and the colors and products, and they're all over the place. But I think part of what is making them all over the place is that the products are all kind of coming out of sequence from what they intended. I actually think that's the reason that the iMac didn't have center stage, is that iMac was supposed to come sooner. And it didn't. And so it didn't have center stage because I think it wasn't designed with center stage in mind. And then they invented center stage and they ship them at the same time. And you're like, well, why doesn't the iMac have center stage? The answer is they're not going to ever tell you, but we didn't expect them to ship this way. And I think that will be true with these laptops, where I would actually be surprised if they aren't just silver and space gray, even though they've been experimenting with lots of other colors, because, you know, these were supposed to ship in June before they did all the color stuff that they did. Like, I mean, I know the iMacs have it, but like Starlight, I think there will be a Starlight MacBook and maybe MacBook Pro even, but not yet. Cause I think that whole Starlight thing was being unveiled this fall. And these are summer computers that got delayed.
Yeah, I agree. I think these look more like last generation MacBook Pros in terms of, you know, the styling, in the same way that there's been all that talk about the colored MacBook Airs showing up next year, which is like, well, but we already launched, you know, the M1 Air, which basically looked indistinguishable. And part of that was strategy, right? Because they could roll it out and be like, look, you're going to get this new Mac. It's going to be amazing on the inside. And you're not going to know, like, you can't tell the difference, right? Like, the whole point is it was supposed to be a seamless transition.
Exactly. And so the Mac Mini looks the same. And, like, they're all the same. And isn't that comforting? I think these are going to be
next
a little
generation,
bit different.
Yeah, I think they'll probably change some stuff. I mean, port configurations, I think there's some questions there. I think there's questions of how dramatic.
If they add ports, remove the touch bar, and on the 14-inch model or 13-inch turned into maybe a 14-inch and expand, you know, reduce the bezel size and all of that, I think it will look different. I don't think it's going to be dramatic, but Apple doesn't seem to be inclined to make dramatic changes to their Pro laptops anyway. So I do think that, you know, this is their first major revision in a few years for these products. But, you know, I think if you want colors on them, I think you're going to have to wait. Then again, if you're somebody who loves silver and doesn't like Starlight, this might be your last chance to get a non-slightly gold silver Mac.
before the pendulum swings again in the 5 years, it's back to silver. Who knows?
True.
I'm intrigued. See, this is not a product that I'm in the market for at all.
No.
But I'm intrigued to see what it looks like, because I think it'll give us some interesting pointers towards what the rest of this product transition is going to look like.
Right. I'm also curious if they'll use this opportunity to knock off the Intel Mac Mini in space gray that's still sitting on the price list. Because the impression I get is that it's literally there because the M1 couldn't do everything that the Intel Mac Mini could do. And so they kept them both around. And they made the new M1 version silver instead of space gray, which means it's less pro or whatever in Apple's parlance. But I think I might have even picked it in the upgrade draft, but I think there's a really strong possibility that as an aside, they will basically replace the Space Gray Mac Mini with an M1X or whatever version. It's essentially just a high-end SKU of the Mac Mini that's got the fancier processor in it. And I think people will love that, right? There are a lot of people who want a powerful desktop Mac that uses something more than the M1, and this would potentially give them to it. And more importantly, I think in the overall scheme of things, it's one less Intel product on the list. So why not knock it off?
They got to do it at some point.
They do.
Transitioning the whole lineup.
Yeah, if they don't do it now, they'll do it soon. Like if it isn't as part of this event, they'll do it at some point because it's just sitting right there. Like that product doesn't. Once there's an M1X, that product doesn't need to exist anymore. It can be replaced with an Apple Silicon product, and we're done. I still wonder. This is not going to be addressed on Monday, but I still wonder the long term fate of that 13-inch MacBook Pro. It allows them to claim there's a MacBook Pro for $1,299 instead of, $1,699 or whatever. Like, they're not cheap. They are very expensive laptops. At the same time, it's got the touch bar, and it's this weird tweener product that's kind of a MacBook Air, but kind of a MacBook Pro. At the very least, it will be unique if there's a 14-inch and a 13-inch, at least that will differentiate it slightly. But I do wonder.
I think
about
the writing's
on
the wall for that product eventually. I think it's heading somewhere else. I mean, I don't think. Yeah, it's going up. It's going up the river, down the river, to the farm.
I think maybe you're right that in the end it might get an M1X processor. And it might lose the touch bar, but they're going to want to keep it cheap. So it'll be like bare bones level in terms of base RAM and all of that. It probably won't have a fancy screen. Like there are rumors that there's going to be like a micro LED extended dynamic range screen on these things, or at least on some of them. That I could see other ways of them differentiating that 13-inch model while still having it be more than the MacBook Air is.
But it feels like the old, remember when they kept the non-Retina 13-inch around for like a super long time because it had an optical drive and all that stuff. It feels like the
legacy
holdover.
Compatible. Yeah, it's a vestige of a bygone age, basically. And I can't believe that in the long run that's what they want. But I'm fascinated to see ultimately what happens to that product because as of Monday, assuming that these things get announced on Monday, that product looks even weirder.
Right. That it does seem like it feels like it sticks out a bit.
And they could kill it, or they could literally kill it and replace it with a low end SKU of the 14. I don't think they will. There are no rumors to that effect anyway. And it seems like something that they could do really kind of at any time. They don't need to do it when the other ones come in, but it's gonna need to be different at some point. Just because it's got like the touch bar and stuff on it. It's just it's a weird computer and it doesn't I think truly that slot is a legacy of some of the bad decisions Apple made like 5 years ago.
Trying to get rid of the Air and
and are still trying to dig themselves out of. So
I agree. I think they'd like to get rid of it, but it just holds down that point right now. We'll see.
Because
I think they'd like a lineup that is more clearly delineated. And I've made this comment about the iPad too, which is you want something that holds down certain price points and that delivers features at certain values. And the more simple it is, the benefit you have of making those arguments easier to your customers, right? Like it's clearly delineated. Right. This is the product that you get for $9.99. This is the product you get for $14.99, et cetera, right? Like, you can tweak some stuff within those to sort of move around a little bit, but you don't want those collisions because I think they get people to sort of scratch their heads and like, do I want this one or that one? You just want to make a purchase.
I think the ultimate fate of that 13-inch MacBook Pro is that it's going to be, it's eventually going to get the M1X or whatever. It will get on the Pro series of processors, but it will probably stay at 13. Maybe not, but probably. And it won't have all the fancy ports and stuff that the new ones have. And it'll just be kind of if you want to start at $12.99, you can, but you're not going to get the fancy stuff. That starts at $16.99.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It's the MacBook Air Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. But the less that it's like the MacBook Air, the better. And I think that the processor cores actually would be a great way to differentiate that is to say the M1, the MacBook Air is an M1 and then it's going to be an M2 and then it's going to be an M3. It's never going to be more than that because that's what the goal of the MacBook Air is. And I know the rumor is they're redesigning the MacBook Air a bit too, and that will probably also help push it into a different place than the Pro. But, you got to, it's one of these weird parts of Apple's Mac product line that would be nice to see some movement. And it sounds like we're going to see some movement on Monday, right? Like we're going to get, you know, I think Mac laptops are the single most important product. I mean, the Mac laptops are three quarters of the Mac.
Yeah, I mean, at least of the Mac line. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously the iPhone is Apple's.
Yes.
Most,
they're the biggest part of the Mac line.
You could argue now the Apple says what the MacBook Air is basically
probably a better seller,
the biggest
it's
Mac,
the most popular. Yeah.
But like as the Mac laptop line goes, you know, it sort of goes to the MacBook Pro. It like is the defining characteristic of this. And certainly for our audience of people who really care about this stuff, like the MacBook Pro is super important. And these times don't come around that often. I mean, it was a big deal back in the fall of 19 when they did the 16 inch with the new keyboard and all that. Like that was a big moment. And that was, you know, right before the pandemic. That was my last business trip that I took, was to New York for that event. And, you know, so it's been a while now. Here we are. It's 2 years later, and we are going to hopefully finally get our Apple Silicon MacBook Pro story in a real way, because these are the real MacBook Pros. So I'm looking forward to that. And the fact that it opens some doors for other higher end right? It's going to have more max RAM and more GPUs and more cores and more ports. And if all the rumors are true, or if some of the rumors are true, this is the, you know, going beyond the M1 to show that there's more that Apple Silicon Macs can do. I think that's very exciting, because the M1 is great, but it is super constrained on what it can do.
Right. I mean, it's the iPad chip, right? It's an iPad in a Mac.
It is.
Well, and it raises some questions, interesting questions about the future of the iPad line too, right? I mean, you know, how will that roll into the iPad line? You know, I'm kind of curious to see, looking at this event, you know, I'm sure you have your opinion on the over-under on the time, but like, you know, it's roughly an hour event.
I set the, spoilers for the upgrade draft episode, but I set the over-under at 60 minutes.
Yep, good call.
It feels, and in the past, somebody looked it up, they've done some 43-minute events and some 71-minute events, so yeah. It could be either way. My gut feeling is that it will be under a little, because this is a super-focused event, but you never know with Apple.
Well, laptop, Mac Mini, and then the wild cards are like new AirPods,
yeah, which could be dusted off fairly quickly at the very beginning, just get them out there, like, oh, we love AirPods, they're great, here are some new ones.
Yep.
Back to you,
Tim. I don't think there's not really much else in the offing, but you never know. I mean, like,
you never know. That Mac Mini, but again, that's like, we're also updating the Mac Mini today with the same chip. Yay!
Yep.
Moving on, and it'll all be available, you know, and then it's like October 29th or November 5th, one of those.
HomePod Mini 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo, yeah. I think it'll be interesting. It's been an interesting fall so far, and this sort of will probably be the last major announcement. I mean, I will also mention Monterey. I'm sure we'll get a ship date in there.
Yeah, I assume they will say, and it'll be the week that the Macs ship.
Right.
Even though they keep changing Safari, and they still change Safari, and it doesn't feel like they're done with Monterey, which I find really disturbing.
Because
I assume it's been loaded on systems already, and they're going to do. Apple seems comfortable now doing this thing where it ships with quote unquote final 12.0 in this case, and then like with iOS 15, then it'll update to actual 12.0.
the latest beta includes the preference. You can now see the preferences for universal control, but you can't activate them.
I can't believe that it's universal control will ship.
No, I think it's
having not been in a beta, right? You want to beta test that stuff. Like, why would you ship a feature that's never been beta tested if you have a beta cycle?
That would be bananas. I mean, I think it's a 12.1 at the very earliest. And it might be later than that, because that's only one round of betas then. I assume they've been doing stuff internally, but...
Sure, but I think in a week or two, there will be a 12.0 final and a 12.01 or 12.1 beta for Monterey, and that it will parallel a release of 15.1 or 15.2 or whatever for iOS, and they'll both go through the beta cycle with universal control. We'll all get to try it out and see how it works, and then they'll release that. I suspect that they, in the end, they're going to just sync those up and beta test that feature essentially simultaneously because it's a 2OS feature. You got to have both.
Yeah. Right. Right. And it's the interesting situation where I usually at this point, you know, once the full releases are out, I switch off the beta train. And this year I've left my iPad on the beta train.
I regret taking it off the beta train because they fixed the favorites bar on iPad too.
Yeah, I know. I kept it on my iPad, and I'm still running obviously the beta on my MacBook, and I think I will keep going with that because I want to try the universal control at least. And yeah, it's so weird. Because it's described as a beta in the OS.
Mm.
It has like a beta tag on it in the preferences pane, which is wild. But I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, the fact that Apple is spending more time having its update stuff sort of go more gradually rather than everything promising to ship everything once, failing to ship everything at once. It stuff happens over a period of months now. So this will be later.
So here, this is not something I've written about yet, but I spent a lot of time with it this week because I am writing a macOS Monterey review that is based on parts of my preview that I wrote for the public beta, but I write new stuff as well. And I spent most of yesterday morning with shortcuts.
Mm.
And that's a feature that needs to be marked as a beta. It needs to be marked as a beta. And I know maybe it doesn't matter because it is what it is, but like, it's not ready. Like, it's a mess. It's a mess on iOS, too.
It's bad on iOS, too.
And they didn't mark it as a beta. It's just a mess over there. But on the Mac, it works better than it did at the start. They have made a lot of progress over the summer. But I defy you, as a Mac user, especially if you've never seen shortcuts on iOS, to use the shortcuts app and not be baffled by some of the interface elements that are in there, where it's like, do I click on this? That does a different thing. Do I right click on this? Oh, that does a completely different thing. And the labels are weird and the behavior is weird, which is not to say that it doesn't work, because it does work. Some things about it don't work, but lots of stuff actually works. Like Federico's enormous Apple Frames shortcut that he released this week. It works on the Mac unchanged. It's weird, but it works. And I feel like that sums it up. I tweeted about this. I said, shortcuts, one, it works. It's amazing. Two, it's so strange and ugly and bad interactions. So where does that leave us? I feel like I'm glad that it's not, that they didn't get rid of Automator and we can all just kind of try shortcuts. But I think you take some of the pressure off and say, it's a beta. We're spending this year kind of figuring it out and just call it what it is, which is not really polished at all.
Yeah, and I agree. On iOS 15, it is a mess. I have a lot of shortcuts that don't work. I have actions. Kudos, they added some new stuff, but a lot of it doesn't work.
I tweeted
this morning about there's a Wake Apple TV action, which I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I can set a shortcut that like turns on my Apple TV. It just doesn't work.
You
tap on the thing and it like nothing happens. And then you like tap on it a bunch of times and eventually a pop-up appears. And then you try to select your Apple TV and nothing happens. And then I can't cancel out of the sheet. I'm like, what is that? I took a video of this and posted on Twitter because I'm like, this is dumb. It's totally broken. And I submitted a feedback, like documented it and everything. And I'm like, I've had several beta builds go by now where they haven't changed it. And it's like, it feels like they are concentrating on doing other stuff. And they're like, yeah, shortcuts broken. We know. We'll get to it.
Well,
but it's going to be a little while.
I feel like, I mean, probably they're not prioritizing that because the app is so broken. Like on iOS, if you try to tap on things, sometimes it just loses it loses the plot and you have to, you have to close and then reopen it. And then you can interact with it for a while and then it stops again and you have to close and reopen it. It's just a mess. And on the Mac, like I said, my favorite thing that I discovered on the Mac is there's a shortcut for saving a file and or an item, a block in shortcuts for saving a file. And you can choose where to save it. And by default, it saves it in the shortcuts folder on iCloud Drive. But you can change it.
Yep.
And you also can set like a... where it sets, and it also you can set whether it replaces an existing file with the same name. You can choose to do that or not. And you can choose to have it ask. There are all these checkboxes, which is great. However, if you right-click on the location, or maybe click on the location, one of your options is replace. And I thought, well, that's weird. It turns out that replace means replace the thing that's already here with a new folder of where you wanted to go. And it's like, that is not what you call that. And the word replace is already being used in files for a totally different thing, which is to replace a file. So why did you label it replace? And the answer is, I don't know. And can you click on it or right click on it? It's a mess. And like, I appreciate they bit off more than they could chew is basically it. I think they're doing some great work, but there's too much here. And like, it is a beta, whether they call it a beta or not. Shortcuts in Monterey is a beta. And they just have to keep plugging at it now that it's out in the open and try to make it better during this cycle and then make it better during next cycle. It's got a lot of potential. I think it's going to be good, but it's not there yet. It does. I mean, like I said, it works. A lot of it works. Your Apple TV thing doesn't work. I found some things that don't work on one platform or another, but I've also been able to build some things that work pretty well. And it works with a lot of my AppleScript stuff that I had. I had to make slight changes and then it works. Yeah. But there are also parts of it that are just super messy. And then it also, the other thing that it exposes is gaps in macOS, where macOS...
Sure.
The truth is that macOS has some features that look like the iOS version, but it's a lie. And the share interface is the best example, where Apple has built a share interface on the Mac. But what share interface does on the Mac is not at all what it does.
It's so much more limited.
And it is, right? It is. Well, and what they did is they created like, hey, people know about share. We'll add this to the Mac. But they didn't add the iOS share interface. They added this weird, super limited Mac interface.
Open an app and post this URL in, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a result, there are all these amazing things you can do with the share sheet on iOS with shortcuts, and none of that works on the Mac.
Yeah, it doesn't work, which is wild. Yeah, that's weird. It's also weird because obviously the Mac has a lot of features that, you know, don't exist on iOS and feel like they should be scriptable or addressable, and they're not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the one that comes to mind for me, because I've messed around with this a bunch, is multiple desktops. There is no way to automatically create. That's nothing. Automator, AppleScript, none of those things know anything about multiple desktops. And that's always been wild to me, because it's like, surely there must be a way to just tell this to create a new desktop. And it's like, nope, the only way to do that is to script like a keyboard shortcut / click the mouse at this spot on the screen to create a new shortcut. And you're like, what? This feature's been around for 15 years and we've never made that automatable in any way.
No, I was struck by how focus mode lets you do things like have a different page on iOS.
Oh my God.
And it does very little on macOS. And I thought this would be such a great opportunity, including the biggest problem is you also can't automate things. And on iOS, you can set up an automation that when you change focus modes, you run a shortcut and things happen. And on the Mac, as far as I can tell, you can't figure it out. It's not built in. And as a result, you know, I would really like also, you know, I would like the idea of what on the Mac could be made better by focus mode. And nobody had that thought, or at least they didn't prioritize it. Like, could I change the dock? Could I change the desktop? Could I move to a different space? Could I go to full screen mode? Like, there's so many options. And instead, focus mode is like, yeah, it's there.
Let me tell you. Oh, my God. So I wrote about this in my iOS 15 review, and I sort of hypothesized. I was like, so one of the frustrations for me with focus mode is that on iOS, it's really designed to be a single app interface, right? So if you go into an app and you switch into a focus mode when you go into that app, the second you leave that app, if you have to like go get something from another app, like, oh, I'm writing something, I need to look something up in Safari, it takes you out of focus mode. And I thought to myself, well, on the Mac, this will be much better because I can just say like whenever Audio Hijack is open, switch me into like a podcasting focus mode.
Nope.
It still only works if it's in the foreground. As soon as you switch away, it goes away and you're like, what? What is this?
And again, if you had it hooked up to automation in some way, you could build your own system for this, right? You could build, in fact, it may happen because it may be something that people can do somewhere in the system. I imagine there's a way. I haven't found it yet. I posted something on the automator's message board about this. Like, anybody know a way, like a command line thing, something where you can detect what focus mode is? Because somebody should be making an app. And they may be making it even now. Who knows? An app that is a focus mode thing for the Mac that lets you do things like set some logic up of like, if Audio Hijack is running, then be in this. And like, you could build an interface for it that Apple should build, but it could be a third party opportunity if the hooks are there. I'm not sure the hooks are there right now. The only way I can tell to determine focus mode is to have Keyboard Maestro click open the control center and see what the focus mode button says, which is not great. So I'm sure there's somebody is digging and there will be skullduggery that will lead to somebody saying, oh, well, if you grep this certain command, it will reveal what the focus mode name is. And then you could put that in a script somewhere. And then somebody will build a utility off of that, which is, I would say, a great opportunity for a utility on the Mac to do that, because Apple, it just didn't do it, and there's just nothing there.
Yep. I mean,
focus mode per app, I do have a problem with the exact same reason you mentioned it too, which is, I appreciate saying, you know, when I'm in OneWriter or Scrivener or whatever, that do not disturb. But like, if I go to Safari to look something up and I get a hail of messages, it's like, no.
I'm
like,
working. I'm still working.
Even if it's if I'm in here, you like to build in a timeout. Like if it's been 5 minutes, then turn it off. But otherwise, I'm multitasking here.
Or maybe ask you like, oh, we notice you're in Safari, or do you want to turn off the focus mode? Even that would be better. But like, it does, I find it kind of unusable based on app launches because of this.
It's a good idea, and it just needs to be better. Like, the base idea of it, I really like. I was watching multiple sporting events at once on an iPad and an Apple TV the other night, and somebody we know sent me a text message about a link that they thought was bad on like a really way down page on the Incomparable. And I realized I need to be in Do Not Disturb here, because this person is going to send me like 5 text messages about this, and I don't want to think about it, because like, nobody cares. The problem, I can fix the problem tomorrow. I just want this person not to bug me. And like, I like that idea that you really have context where you're like, I don't want to hear from people or from certain people, or only from certain people, I guess is how it works.
Right.
So I really like the idea. My fear is that like so many of these Apple products that are Apple features, that they roll it out and then they never touch it again.
Yep.
And like, focus feels like a feature with lots of potential, but it's not done. It's only getting started. And if they leave it where it is, it's going to be useless for most tasks.
It'll never get adopted.
It'll never fulfill its potential.
Die on the vine.
I'll be disappointed in it. How about that? It'll never fulfill. I'm so disappointed in you. I just thought you would be better than that.
Focus mode.
So make something of yourself, focus mode.
Grow up.
Keep at it. Keep at it. You're not done. You need to work more. You need to be better.
Perhaps you could focus on it.
Focus. They need a little focus on that. It's true. I finally wrote my thing about the weird Android tablet that I've been talking about here.
Oh yeah,
here and
there.
The Books Nova Air, which was kind of an essay about unitaskers and multitaskers. In the end, I was like, how am I going to talk about this? And I really need to talk about like my journey in why I was interested in this product and asked for a review unit and in using it. And the answer is, I think e-ink is great for certain things. The idea of a black and white, like super readable, super legible text display, I think is really good. That's one of the reasons I like an e-reader. But the other reason is that they don't have a lot of the distractions that other devices have. And this thing was kind of e-ink, but not as good because it's using Android apps, most of which don't know they're on e-ink. And so they do weird stuff and you have to scroll and it leaves kind of garbage behind on the screen and stuff like that. And it combines that with having a bunch of apps to switch around on and stuff like that, which is not the kind of more isolated version of like a Kindle or a Kobo, where there's literally kind of like one app or maybe like 2 apps that you can use. And I thought, there's probably a great e-ink device to be made but it would have to be made by somebody who is willing to spend more money than this Books company at doing lots of custom apps. And the truth is, even then, the Washington Post app isn't going to be rewritten for it, right? So you're always going to run into some of those problems, but you could do like a decent RSS reader, and you could do a decent sort of like e-ink based thing. So that's either that, or they need to make e-ink screens that refresh fast enough and clear enough that you essentially can use them like a tablet. Because the problem with this thing is it's an Android tablet, right? So if I want to scroll instead of do a next page, which it kind of doesn't do, you swipe your finger up and it's like, right? It's because it's super jittery. It doesn't have a refresh rate that's capable of doing more than, you know, 4 frames a second or whatever. And then where the graphic was that I've scrolled up to text, there's like a ghost of the graphic there. And it's because e-ink is not really meant to be running on an Android tablet. It's really not. It's not good at that. So if they make it better, I would be interested in that. But I think the truth is that, you know, you pick an e-ink device because it's super kind of like low tech, simple, just words on a page. And if you want more than that as a reader, the iPad mini is a great option. The part I didn't talk about, but I've written about before, what I really consider the tragedy here is that Amazon has not made any effort to add other apps to the Kindle. And that's a company with the wherewithal to add a few, I'm not saying a lot, but like to add a few more apps to the Kindle, to let it do a few other reading things. And like, it just hasn't. At least Kobo has Pocket. Kobo basically has a Pocket client built into it. So if you want to save articles using Pocket, you can read them on your Kobo. And that's sort of what I'm talking about is if you made your web browser better and more kind of optimized for e-ink, which Amazon has never done, it's been experimental since the day it was launched. It will never not be experimental. It's really just there so you can log into Wi-Fi at a hotel. I feel like there could be something there. So at this point, I feel like for most people, you should either get a totally purpose-built e-reader or you should just get an iPad mini. And the only way that that will ever change is display technology, is if they make either a much better e-ink display that refreshes way faster, or they make some weird kind of like hybrid display down the way that has kind of a reading mode that is more like a reflective screen. But that doesn't seem to be where most display technology is going. So it was an interesting journey. The hardware, this Book's hardware, it's really nice. It's the size of an iPad mini. The screen, the e-ink screen is a big, nice screen. It's flush. You have to like turn on Google Play, but then you can install apps on it. Like there are lots of things about it that I really, really liked, but the software is just generally pretty bad. And I think anybody who listens to this podcast who cares about this kind of stuff, like you would be appalled at how bad the software is. So, you know, in the end, I emailed the company and I was like, oh, here's my review. And I'm, you know, sorry, I'm kind of beating you up, but the hardware is nice, but the software is just not there. And the response back was, we are always striving to make the software better. We know it's a big issue. Hang on to the device. We have firmware updates. We're going to keep working on it. And like this company, this is what they make, is these kinds of things. So like, if they had resources, I think they could probably make a go at it. But they're like, there are so many different things they have to do. And it's just, I can't see them succeeding at it. But I'm rooting for them because it's actually kind of a fun device. It's just not very good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's weird with those devices that kind of fit in little niches in between other devices. Like, you know, it's not quite, it's an e-reader, but it's not quite a tablet. And it's trying to be both.
From what Dan Frommer and Ben Baharin, I think, both commented on one of my tweets about it, and they're both using the Remarkable, which if you're on Instagram, you've probably seen ads for it, and it's an e-ink tablet with a pen, and the Book's Nova Air actually does come with a pen, but I didn't try it because I'm not really interested in that, and I think it's too small for that. But like, there is this class of product that it's a larger e-ink screen, so it displays PDFs pretty well, and they have pens, and you can basically, you use it like you're marking up documents, except you're marking up PDFs, and you can write on them with the pen and send those PDFs back with your notes on it. Mm-hmm. And what I said to them is, see, when I talk about being a unitasker and good at a particular job, that's what I mean. Like that product is probably perfect for that very specific use case, which I'm not interested in and I'm not really interested in writing about. And so I didn't go down that path. I'm more interested in a universal reader with e-ink. Mm-hmm. But like, that's a great example of a niche that you could fill with a product like this. But those guys were even like, yeah, everything else it doesn't do very well, but it does this one thing really well. And it's like, that's great. That's actually, if you spend every day looking at documents in PDF, you could use an iPad for that, but maybe, I mean, an e-ink reader that made those documents look really nice and that you could write on pen and then send them off and all that. Like, I could see it. I could see it for that. But that's just not what I'm looking for.
Sure. Yeah. It's an interesting idea. And I do kind of appreciate companies that take this attempt to do something that's a little bit more off the beaten path, right? Like, I feel so many product lines are established these days where it's like, we've got our tablets, we've got our smartphones, we got our laptops and our desktops. It's interesting to see people try and create new categories. Sometimes it's not always going to work, but it's intriguing.
And they're trying their hardest. What I would say is the only way something like this would work is if a platform owner embraced the idea. So like if Google said, you know what, we think e-ink tablets is something that is going to be good. And the fact is, Google doesn't even think tablets are good. So it's never going to happen. Right. Or Apple thought that they wanted to do it, right? If you think of like, well, what if Apple wanted to release an e-ink reader running iOS? What would that look like? And the answer is they'd put a whole bunch of APIs in the operating system for page turn and for contrast control and for, you know, is this running on an e-ink screen? And they'd get all the developers to support it and they'd release the thing and it would be great, or at least good, because the software, the platform owner would say, you will do this, and updates the APIs and does all the things it needs to do to support it. And they would build it into their foundation, right? Where it's like, if you're displaying text on the screen, it's going to page turn whether you know it or not. It's going to do that because we built that in at the core level. That's what Apple would do. And for Google, they would need to care about this category enough to build the equivalent of that into Android. The problem is, this category is such a niche category, it's never going to happen. So the only other alternative is, like I said, it's for Kobo or Amazon to say, we're going to write some more software for our devices that make them more computer-like. But the truth is, like, Amazon stuff is not a platform. It's all purpose-built. I've got the Echo Show, and, like, it frustrates me to no end that there are apps on the Amazon Fire Stick that will display certain kinds of TV programming. And the Echo Show runs Fire OS,
right?
And it won't support those. Sure. Yeah. And like, it just, it's so frustrating. But that's because it's not a platform. Like, Echo Show only does what Amazon wants Echo Show to do, right? And that's it. Like, that's all you can do. And so they don't really have any interest in expanding Kindle as a platform to be anything but what it is. Even though they have a whole app store of Android apps, and they could potentially cultivate relationships with some of them and have those things run. I don't know if Kindle probably doesn't even run Android. It probably runs something very weird and proprietary, but regardless, like, they could go in that direction if they wanted to, but, you know, they don't want to. So
there's not much. It feels like there's not much, or at least they don't believe there's much for themselves to gain there.
I think that's probably true. Although I keep thinking, like, you know, would there be some gain in them making deals with, like, major newspapers, or even building like an Apple News equivalent that ran on the Kindle, something like that, right? Where now you're going to sell more Kindles because the Kindle is not just about books, but it's also about news.
Didn't that used to be a thing in the early days? Well, I felt like there was news reading on Kindle back
so
in the
you
day.
Could buy news. I used to get the San Francisco Chronicle on Kindle, and then I switched when they did an iPad app. I eventually switched. The difference is that is, and they, I think they still sell these things that way. But what it is the newspaper does an export of their daily edition to Kindle in the morning when they publish their daily edition, and it gets pushed to your device, and then you can read today's newspaper. Very old school. Problem is, if you want to read it at a different time, too bad. Like, you can't, like, modern iPad newspaper apps. It's what's happening now.
Right.
It's all their stories that have been for the last few days. And Amazon's thing was very much just like a bundle of stories sent to you as a file. But they never went beyond that. And again, maybe the answer is Amazon's done all the market research and they know that the only people who want to read it on a Kindle they like that it only does books. They only want it to do books. It's never going to do anything. It's a direction they could have gone to say, we're also going to integrate with Pocket, or we're going to build our own Kindle clipping service. I mean, I know you can email and stuff, but you know what I'm saying is sort of like making more kind of peers with the book reading process for news or the web or RSS or something. And I think the bottom line is they've thought about it and they're just not interested in that. And that's fair. That's fair. It's just, that's the one part of me that I find sad is that I like reading on an e-ink device, and yet I do all my reading in the morning is on an iPad, and I like my iPad and it's superior for it, but like it's only superior for it because it's got the high refresh screen and the apps. And would I rather read all the stuff I read in the morning on a e-ink device? Probably, but that's not an option, so I don't. Fair enough.
There you go.
That's my journey. Thanks for listening, Dan.
Sure.
No, it's quite the journey.
Well, anyway, the Books Nova Air is in a box now. I don't need to look at it anymore. It's in a box. I'm going to put it away somewhere.
Banished to the box.
And they can send me an email when they fix their software, which they will try to do and won't do. So, oh well. Maybe one day e-ink will blow us away with its new instant refresh screen, and I'll revisit this.
I never know.
I do have a new Kobo coming next week, maybe. So I'm going to review that. Looking forward to that. That's the one that's got Dropbox support, so you can actually like put books in a Dropbox and they show up, which is that's pretty sweet. Like that.
Yeah. Put that in all your stuff, Kobo.
All right. Monday, Apple event. We'll be back next week to talk about it. Excited.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stuff coming. Good. I guess that's the end of probably the last Apple announcements for the fall.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's okay with me. I don't want them to stretch it into November again like they did last year. No.
We'll put a bow on it.
No. Let's put a bow on it, put it under the tree and be done. All right. We'll be back in a week, but until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.